Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back to the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We're here on the Yellow Ball Network. If you want to try and reach us, you can reach us on our Yellow Ball hotline, and that hotline number is 646-652-4856. And we're here every week. Right now we're still working on trying to figure out exactly what day we're going to come back and what time exactly, but we're going to stay in the swing of things and try to get the show going each week. We're going to try to take a commercial break and come back in just a minute. And when we do, we'll get started with this week's show.
Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's Courtmakers.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
Okay, we're back here on the We Coach Tennis Radio program. I'm here in the studio, and actually, today, he's promised me he's going to stay silent. I got little James in here with me. James, come here for a second, though, actually. Come up here. Now, you've been playing tennis for a little while now, and don't be shy. Don't be shy. I want to ask you a couple of questions. We've got new things going on. You went to a tournament just recently in Myrtle Beach, right?
Yes, sir.
And now, my philosophy on this is I don't care what the format is. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it is. You're going to play it and play it the best of your ability, right?
Yes, sir.
We're going to do it. It doesn't matter if it's ping pong scoring. You're going to do it, right?
Yes, sir.
But they had you play in no-ad scoring. And had you play in short sets.
Yes.
You get to play more people that way. What do you think about it?
Well.
You're 9 years old, right?
Yes.
And you're just starting tennis. Do you know about the different ways of scoring?
Yes.
Is tennis scoring complicated?
Yes, it can be.
It can be?
They make it more complicated than it should be.
And how do you mean?
They make it so all the tiebreakers, if it just won, you wouldn't have all these problems.
What do you mean? What do you mean? You mean they give you a 10-point tiebreaker and a 7-point tiebreaker,
mm-hmm.
and they mix them all up in one match?
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to keep track of sometimes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other day you played another tournament. You went out, and because you've been doing different formats and everything else, you go into this format, and you actually had to stop in the middle of a match and say, are we playing ad or no ad? Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that confusing to you?
Yes. Now they're changing it to now they're trying to make it no ad, but if they just kept it ad, it would be more simple, and we would already know we're playing ad. We already know.
Are you right now? You say more simple. That's probably not the best grammar in the world, but let me ask you this, okay? Now, do you like no ad scoring, or do you like no ad scoring? No ad's quicker. It ends quicker. It's a lot faster. You don't get as tired, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? You like that, Noam?
No.
Why? Why don't you like Noam? Because I talk about it a lot?
No.
Well, why don't you like it?
Because, like, you lose faster, and then you don't have a chance to go back and try to fight it off.
What do you mean, fight it off?
You still win that game.
I don't know what you mean. Tell me what
even if you lose this, then you still can fight it back if you're playing ad. But now you can't fight it back. You just lose the game.
What about, it's no ad scoring. They say that's more exciting. Is that more exciting for you than ad? Which is more exciting, ad or no ad?
Ad.
Ad is more exciting. Why? When they say it's more pressure with no ad, why is it not more pressure for you? Which is more pressure? Why do you say it's more pressure to have ad?
Pressure is fun because when you win that point, you're happy.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what if you just win that point and you win a game? It's over real quick. You don't like that?
Yeah, but you still don't get to win. If you win 2 points in a row, you're like, yay, come on, let's win the next game.
So it's a different way of looking at it. Well, all right, you sit back down over there while we're doing this show. That's from the mind of a 9-year-old. I don't know. I'm hoping to bring on. I tell you what I want to do is I'm going to go ahead and bring on. I've got a caller here, and I know it's Coach Creasy. Coach, how you doing?
I'm fine. Hey, JD. Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Good. How you doing? Listen, I'm really trying to get the show back up and running, and this is a sort of a fly by the seat show, and I wanted to ask you a variety of questions, maybe talk about a couple of different things. Did you happen to hear James there talking about ad versus no ad?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and if you talk to any of the players. You talk to any of the players, they will all say this. And even the senior players, I had a 82-year-old senior player said, hey, how do you think I feel? Conditioning really matters when we play. He says, I'll get a guy all tired, and then he gets to play a tiebreaker. He can tank that second set. So, yeah, the players all doing this. But, JP, we talk about this so much. But it is a definite agenda by the USTA. Don't you see that they've got pro doubles? Now, tell me about pro doubles. It has not gotten better with this no ad. If you ask even the players that played it for years, they'll say they'd rather play a complete format. Get pro doubles. Then they got ITF doubles. By the way, they say ITF, oh, we're getting you ready for the pros, right? Then now they've got college. We're still fighting, but that has been just awful. The way that you do something is more important than what you do. If they had ever had a vote, it should be 2-1 or 66% or 2/3. But even if they had a decent vote of all the players and coaches, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. We'd say this is something that's best thing since sliced bread. Maybe it's the way we ought to go. But they've never had that. They've never had a consensus, and they did it anyway. So they have college. Now they're doing juniors like your son, and the juniors are just saying, hey, we're getting the kids ready for college. You know, and it's just – unbelievable. And what most people don't realize is that in 5 to 7 years, these high school and college kids that play no ad, they will not fight about playing no ad in the pros or in adult tournaments because they will be indoctrinated. So it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. You know,
well,
but,
it becomes something you're used to. I mean, we get to a point where we don't fight it because
well,
we're sort of
fighting.
Used to.
You stop fighting. I'm at the age where I don't. You get to the place where you just don't care. You know, people are going to think what they want, but you fight for things that are right. And the tragedy is a lot of our younger coaches, they're just trying to hold on to their jobs. They're not making people mad. They don't want to make waves. That's a tragedy. And all I will blame bad leadership. And ITA, bad leadership for many, many years. And in the ITA and in the USTA, you've got number two people. There's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. And you have this, committee people who don't have enough skin in the game to really understand tennis, making these decisions that for them to just think, hey, no ad is more exciting. That's ludicrous. It's just so, so bad for them to even think that is such a stupid argument. And I don't know how to put it any better than that.
I want to bounce around a little bit. I want to touch on something different. Okay. I have this year, and you have sort of talked about this a little bit. I've never seen a profession where, people will, it's close to me, but I have a guy who's a friend of mine. He was a paint salesman. And lately he decided he's going to quit painting and he's going to go into coaching tennis. People will leave a profession, some you and I've done for 30 plus years. You've done more than I have, but I feel like I can say I've done it for close to 30 years, if not more, because I was teaching early on. I apprenticed myself to a coach early on, Dean Mathias, back in Greensboro, North Carolina. And so I was teaching with him, and that's how I got my lessons. But these guys now, people all over, they quit their day job. They're becoming tennis coaches. What do you think about that?
Well, have you ever noticed that we have one of the only sports where parents sit on the sideline of a tennis lesson and they, many, many parents feel like they know as much or more than the coach? I mean, we would never go into a dentist office and say, look, you need to be drilling on the teeth a little bit like this or that. And that speaks sort of to the lack of, lack of respect we have for coaches sometimes or whatever, but there must be a great lack of respect for coaches. And it takes a lot of years to earn respect and get credibility and develop players and then have a track record of developing players. And, there's a lot of good and noble people that have started in other professions and become great coaches. But the point being is that I played basketball a lot as a junior, through high school, 1 year in college. But I would never attempt to go coach basketball on the side and think that I could do it with any amount of expertise unless I'd gone through some of the steps. I have to be a JV high school coach, maybe, or an assistant coach, or something, or church league, and then work my way forward. And so that speaks to sort of. And now, those who are out there would say, well, maybe if people get certified, the certification process has been a joke, to tell you the truth. I mean, for years you just paid money and you go get a certification. And what you learn from the certification, there's some things there and stuff. There is a little bit of a standard, but unfortunately, it's been more of a way to collect dues and to collect money than it has been a teaching practice. And I'm not in all cases, but the point is there's really very few good young coaches, great young coaches, because you just have to go through X amount of matches. It's like a rookie race car driver has to come up on the dirt tracks and the midget cars and all those things. You don't get to go to Indianapolis out of the blocks. It takes lots and lots of reps. And unfortunately, for some reason, people think that they can go coach tennis at, and I guess if you can get somebody to listen to you, you can go coach tennis. I guess maybe I could go teach piano if I could get people to take lessons. And it's not all bad. I like the American way of being able to do it, but it's,
you know, I was going to say,
it's interesting,
you know,
about our sport.
Yeah, to be a good coach, to me, there's a lot of small nuances. It's not the formula. It's not the system. It's not, you know, the prescribed way. But there are a lot of nuances to good coaching. You know, I think Robert Lansdorf, he was being interviewed once for 60 Minutes, and they were asking him about what he did as a coach. And he said, you won't be able to get it in a one-hour interview. You won't be able to get it in a one-day interview. It takes a couple weeks to be here and to see the culture that I create here, and that's what makes my coaching good. And so there are nuances to it. I like what you said there. Our American system, I don't mind the fact that somebody, you know, can possibly go out in our capitalistic society and put it together and make themselves a coach in our system. I do think you're right.
Yes.
I think the certification process has been a way to collect dues and money. But I also, you know, some of this now is fitting into, you know, a lot of this stuff fits into, and the USGA is addressing it, and you were sort of, you're on the cusp of that. Look, you know, the USGA ultimately, they haven't made a secret about this. They would actually like, you know, to certify coaches. They'd actually like to have us certified through their auspices and have it done their system and their way. Any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, I'm completely against cookie cutter coaching, and this is America. I always say this is the United States of America. It is not Russia or France or even Great Britain or any of the countries that have become socialist countries. We are going that way a lot because of the overregulation in every walk of life. You know, but however, there are some standards that it's good that you meet as a coach, and I think the USGA would do well to do a lot of coaching seminars, give suggestions, but have a product where people respect it so much that they want to go get certified, not that they're forced to go get certified. Do you understand? I mean, in other words,
Oh, yeah. It's
like, you know, it's like you never, ever, that this is the problem. You know, it's like Big Brother as a central location. If you someone the other day said, what should the USGA do? I said, you know what? If I was in charge of the USGA, I would allow all the states, every state should have states' rights and run their own tennis. Every community should have community rights and run their own tennis and make it competitive to where the best people would have the most successful programs through competition. But under no circumstances, where the USTA overextends themselves is they overreach with, it's just like our government trying to tell every school and every county in America that they have to teach a certain thing a certain way. And then you have government overreach. We have USTA overreach, and it's a shame. And now they have this big bureaucracy that they have to keep funding, and they have to pay all these salaries and all this thing, and it becomes a monster that becomes too tough to feed. And then they have to – and anyhow, the long story short is I told somebody recently the reason homeschooling is thriving is just basically because of overregulation and undereducation by the government. So homeschooling is thriving. We need always those pockets of situation for running tournaments, leagues, all of the things that you can get tennis. Let the USTA be very, very simple. I wish that they had a very, very simple system of just providing directions and simple suggestions and simple formats, that they could be a resource, an educational resource for, and a motivational resource for people, instead of trying to strangle everybody. And that's as simple as it is there. I think if we had states' rights and community rights, it should be bottom-up power, not top-down power. And that would solve the whole thing.
You and I both sort of get caught up in the politics of stuff in the sense that, you know, we see parallel. I mean, when somebody says we get stuck, and I guess they tell me I get stuck in this, and they don't understand. You know, somebody almost shake their heads, and they don't understand. And they can't quite see the importance of mixing the two, but they're mixed. It seems like there's politics and everything, and it seems like you have to kind of be aware of this, don't you? I mean, don't you have to draw the parallels and see the parallels between? I mean, I see the USTA in a good way. There's plenty of good people. We had a great thing. You were there. I actually thought it was super. We had a great guy from Georgia there, this Dominic Mascantonio, president of the USTA Georgia. He sees the picture. He sees where things can get better. But, you know, you got people that protecting their turf and things of that nature. There's a guy that's our executive director for the USTA in Georgia, and he's a great guy. These guys kind of see it, but a lot of times they look at this in a way in which it makes it tough to, you know, they don't want to talk about the politics of it all, and yet you and I see the politics of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things there. We all trust our leaders in the United States. We want to trust our leaders until our leaders do us wrong. And, you know, it's just the way that you want to do. And you hope that learned people and experienced people are in leadership positions. Number one, you know, I have my sayings, but there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. We have promoted a lot of the wrong people. Through systems, whether it is a political thing or whether it is a fairness thing or what a political correctness thing, whenever you promote people into leadership positions who are not number one, number ones hire number ones, number two hire number threes. But whenever you do that, you're going to get problems, and then you elevate people who should not have the responsibility or the Peter principle. Comes into play, and when that happens, you really get people hunkering down, trying to protect their jobs. It's the best job they could ever have, and they protect their jobs. They don't make good decisions, and so I mean, it's just an overall thing that's happening in our country right now. You know, so people hide in organizations. The reason you see this is you're very much an independent thinker. I am an independent thinker where we believe in a capitalist society and situation. We don't like being forced into doing things or mandated. I love the fact Mike Kernodle always brings up the example that where would we be without Skip Fosbury and the Fosbury flop if we had forced him to go over the bar forward every week. We'd never had the Fosbury flop, and hey, we'd never had two-handed backhands probably if it hadn't been for Borg becoming so great, would we? I mean, my golly, think of the innovation that comes from being free. And we're just going to kill innovation. We kill motivation, innovation, and actually keep our cream from separation from the rest of the people who are not the cream of the crop. So, JP, it's an overall problem.
You mentioned, okay, so we're sitting here talking about this, and I agree with you. But what I see, for example, from the very get-go, it seemed like I remember sitting in an office out in Tucson, Arizona with Don Dickinson, and there were a lot of independent coaches on the line. It was a conference call back then, and a lot of these guys were on the line, and they were worried about player development getting established and started and what it was going to do to, you know, to hurt tennis. And a lot of these guys are guys that still speak about this. Jack Sharp speaks about this to this day. But the push has been for a nationally strong tennis federation here in the U.S. And the push came, I think, because of the Swedes and the Czechoslovakians and the Eastern Bloc countries. They had all these players at that particular time, and that was coming about, and that was coming on strong, and that team concept of coaching and traveling together and all that sort of stuff was the impetus here in the U.S. And since that's been in place, now Jack Sharp will contend that it's only going downhill. From your perspective, you actually were approached early on. They, I think, at one time considered you for one of the top positions in player development. Since then, you've sort of been on the periphery of player development. Last year, you were on a committee with the USTA and things of that nature. So you've worked with the USTA. You know the people there. If it's not doing it the way that they're heading with it, if it's not going that way, and it's not, and that's not the best way to do it, in your mind, what would be, in other words, how could they improve on where they're going right now with it? They're obviously making changes. They've obviously tried to do it where, you know, they're not taking kids away so often. They're not going, you know, setting up the house down in Boca for families and things of that nature. But what else could they do overall? Because I don't know, in my mind, if you ask me, I don't know that they could do anything. But in your mind, what could they do?
Well, you bring up a lot of points here. Yes, it was a knee-jerk reaction in the 80s to set up all the player development. There was pressure mounting because when the fall of the Soviet Union happened, all of those great athletes that those Eastern Bloc countries used to put into gymnastics and different sports, a lot of those coaches, a lot of those athletes went to tennis. So all of a sudden, from the United States dominating in the 70s and 80s, because we were a capitalist country, we were first people to be all over it when open tennis came about. So when that happened, we sort of reacted with a, tried to get a similar situation going. And it's really quite interesting that we copied, we tried to copy a lot instead of, you know, going in our own direction. And they've tried to get it right. You know, I did coach the Junior Davis Cup team for about 2.5 years back in the early 80s, United States Junior Davis Cup team. We had some very good, very fine results. And it was all a capitalist situation where the kids tried out. They fought for their positions on the team. We had to go to camp and we had to train. We made them earn everything. And once you had the best kids and then made the best kids work hard, they all, you know, most of them prospered very, very well. And I was offered the director of player development job for the United USTA back in, I think, 86, 87 in there when our teams were hot and I looked like the up-and-coming young whippersnapper, I guess. I did not take the job because of wrong timing for my family, wrong timing for my career. I did not want to bail out on something I loved so much. Looking back, you always wonder about the decisions you make, whether or not I would have succeeded. I think I would have failed, to tell you the truth, because I was too young for so much responsibility. And I would never have written my books because I would have been too busy with this that job. But to answer your question, you know, we need libertarian tennis. You know how libertarians are. They basically, in the politics, they believe that the government should be in charge of monetary, you know, our infrastructure, monetary system, and national defense. You know, the USTA should be like libertarian. They should give complete freedom to states' rights, to all of the political structure should be like that, states' rights. They should be supporting. They should be a resource that people go to. Within every state, you should have your people who are not USTA clones, cutting thing, but they are. They're clones right now. What they should do is have the freedom to innovate. If I was in charge of tennis, South Carolina, for example, I should be able to innovate. And the USTA should just say, look, of you 50 states out there, go get it. Some of you can turn out the best players, some of you aren't, but go get it. And by the way, the top 10 of you do, we're going to give you bonuses. Yeah, you could do it that way. And then I would bust my rear end trying to figure out ways to empower those under me You never get performance out of squelching people's power. The key to power is empowering those under you. And I would empower each of the counties, each of the communities, each of the sections within South Carolina Tennis, USA. Right now, I guarantee you, excuse me, are you there? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Sorry about
background
that.
Noise. No, no, it's okay. Let me finish my thought real quick here. But do you see how this would work? If the USTA central office empowered individual state leaders, and then the state leaders empowered those under them, boy, oh boy, you would have a competitive situation with incentives where people would really go to the moon. Right now, because Tennis South Carolina or Tennis Georgia or Tennis Tennessee, they all have to do, take the walking orders and the locks, you know, and the cookie-cutter orders from the USTA. It disempowers you. You become a company clone, and you have to do what they want. And then in the end, that kills incentive. That's the problem with socialism. We need a situation where the USTA approaches it differently and says, go get it. And here's our top tournaments. Get players there. And by the way, the players who do the best, you know, they get the biggest rewards. And here is the – if you do this as a player, then you get this benefit. You get these wild cards or you get this. And all you have to do is unleash the initiative, the enthusiasm, and the passion of our young kids. You know, my golly, we put a jar on it. And my last statement is this. I've gone to 2 12 and under or 14 and under events in the last 8 months. And, oh, my golly, talk about the no-dose pill. The amount of passion is just was so little. Well, a bunch of nice little kids running around, a bunch of referees running around happy that we had nice little kids. And, you know, but there was no, the passion is gone. Kids are going to quit if there's no passion to do it. So that's a mouthful. So go ahead. I apologize.
Oh, no. It brings me to the idea. You know, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I remember we just had a round table. It was more of a round table discussion. It was a great. I thought it was super. Had you there, had Jerry Baskin there, Rick Davidson, Dom Mascantonio. We had Terhan Bernay. We had a lot of different people from the Atlanta area. Patricia Jensen, she's probably sat through more symposiums and talks than you ever have, Coach. Believe it or not, that lady knows more tennis. She sat through stuff. But we're sitting there, and Peter Lebedev's nice guy working for the USTA. I'm not sure. Well, I think he runs the BB&T or he's the associate guy of BB&T, but he's on the competition committee. Stands up, gets ready to leave the meeting. He had to leave early. He's got to go back and do something else. And he cautions everybody, and he says to us, we've got to, you know, adopt this new collegiate scoring system because that's what they're doing in college. We've got to adopt that for our juniors. And then he comes up to you at the last ITF and mentions it again. So, Coach, let me ask you, I mean, from a developmental standpoint, look, that format and the entire argument that was made for that format for college tennis, I don't remember anywhere, anytime, any of the people that were doing it saying, we're going to do this format for a developmental purpose. So now we've got one of the top guys, and admittedly, he and I just got to disagree on this. Peter feels like we need to implement all of the short scoring into our junior tennis, and I think that's going to destroy things. And people will look at me and they'll think I'm a histrionic, or they'll think that I'm too.
No, please don't. Your instincts are so good. Your instincts are so, so good and so right on. And whether it is a conscious...
Hold on, before you start, remember, at that meeting, I came back after he left, and I cautioned him, and I said, don't do this. But they're going to push forward this, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And whether it is a conscious or subconscious lockstep move by those who are subordinates to the USTA, it is a move that they have been well trained to carry out. And it is not belief of their heart. It has been an order. And whether or not they just don't understand tennis well enough, or whether they're doing the lockstep cookie cutter initiative, doing what has been told for them, but they're wrong. And the reason they're wrong is because they're killing initiative. Again, it is top-down management. And for our governing body, wait a minute, we have a political system changing the Constitution, right? How outraged should we be if our political party, one of them, changes the Constitution of the United States? We should be outraged when our governing body of tennis, because of these people who happen to be in the early 21st century, decide, let's change the scoring system of tennis. How dare that? This is outrageous. It is an outrageous move on their part if you look at it in that, that context. We should be outraged. And the reason that the people aren't is they're either scared or they don't understand the significance at this point. And they just are, maybe they really like no ad or something. But the point is that we have a system that's been in effect for 132 years. So, again, it's an overreach by government. By tennis government overreach is what it is, and not allowing states' rights, individual freedoms. They should be a helping organization, not a governing organization, mandating organization like they are. And if they're going to be a governing organization, it should be a democratic process. It absolutely should not be a socialist or a process of mandating like they are. So, golly.
Recently, it's interesting. You and I've had a few talks about this, and we're kind of bouncing this around. Now, wasn't the first shot of the Revolutionary War or the Civil War, one of the wars, wasn't it shot in South Carolina? Did South Carolina fire the first?
No. Come on, get your wars right. Civil War. But the Revolutionary War was, a lot was fought down here, of course. Charleston was the hub for the British, yeah.
It's possible, if I'm not mistaken, there's coming up in a couple of weeks, there's a group of professionals meeting in South Carolina to discuss some way of circumventing some of the changes that have been made. A lot of independent thinkers, you got these rowdy senators and representatives from South Carolina seem to be leading the call against the current government, things of that nature. But you got
Trey Gowdy, Jeff Duncan.
And I'm sure there are plenty of tennis players out there that just don't see the fun in talking about what you and I are looking at. I think it's probably
they get scared. Listen. People get afraid, and we forget our constitutional rights often. But tyranny should be fought at every level. This is tennis tyranny. And, that's a very strong way of saying it, but it is. Is this tennis tyranny? You bet this is tennis tyranny. Are they using leadership by example or even persuasive leadership? They are not. This is tennis tyranny. And we are bound by God and bound by our heritage and all the people that have died for our freedom. The shame is people do not understand the cost of losing your freedom. And I don't care whether it is a job, I don't care whether it's politics or it's tennis, but when the freedom is gone, you have no life. And we will not have achievement And that's why communist countries, socialism has never worked. In communist countries, communism has never worked. And the only thing that's going to work is free enterprise.
Well, it probably works best. It doesn't. It certainly doesn't work as well here. Now, maybe national federations work better in some other small countries that aren't as diverse, that don't have 50 different states spread out all over, and that don't have all the different things going on around them. You know, that might work in some countries. I tend to think that a lockstep sort of one way of doing things, centralized, you know, the USTA, I would not enjoy getting into tennis if I was a young coach. I suppose it might be intoxicating. The way they would present it to you, they'd probably have you come to a big meeting. They'd treat you really nice. They'd buy you great dinners and give you bags of goodies and all this sort of stuff, and then train you to teach the way they want you to teach. And then you go off, you know, ignorance is bliss, or no more the wiser. I don't know that there'll be a whole lot of, after a certain level in that, there's not a whole lot of dream making going on, is there? There's not a lot of, like what you say, incentive or enthusiasm to do. So you and I, we've been bouncing it around a little bit. We've got this idea, and I sort of was talking to you, and I said, in the hunting world, we've got ducks unlimited, we've got quail unlimited, pheasants unlimited, and all these are kind of things that are dying. And you know, it was real easy for me to think about tennis as something, you know, real tennis at least it's sort of dying. And so, you know. Now, you like the idea of tennis players unlimited. I'm saying tennis unlimited. I'm thinking of something, of forming something, and it's not to take away from what the USTA is doing in any way. In fact, maybe some of the events, you know, if you did a round robin, you could do no ad. If you did something else, you could do no ad. But you could have some real neat, we could start a, I could see starting something called Tennis Unlimited and then having chapters. Just, you know, and with these, you know, these hunting guys are like the most sophisticated guys out there. These are pretty simple guys, country guys, farmers, and people like that. And what they do, Coach, is they start up these different chapters. So you'll have a quail unlimited chapter. And in their profession and in their area, they're probably very sophisticated to get into farming and that sort of stuff. But they set up these small organizations. It would be a chapter, say, in Griffin, Georgia, or someplace like that. And they would bring in enthusiasts that would want to do and compete under maybe some different rules or do it the way that they want to do it. How does that idea, you and I have sort of been it about, what do you think? You think we can make something happen with this?
Let's do it. You know, and the point is, look, your stronger leaders are going to want freedom. No one is against USTA, ITA, anybody being successful. What we're against is tyranny. What we're against is their abuse of power. They're getting power and abusing the power. And this is what we're against, in a government abusing their power or anything. What happens is you will have the people that side in with them, and they will become lapdogs, are the number two or the number three people, the people who want an elevator to a higher position, and then you get company people, or you get, and again, the weak people in big positions, they're always good until the shooting starts, or they're always good until the pressure comes. So if they haven't been through enough things there, they will, you know, then they fold when the pressure comes. Your idea is a great one. I would, you know, just work on that subtly and try to see where it goes. But we do need people to stand up for freedom. We need a tea party, a tennis tea party out there. We need people who are not, who can't be bought, who stand up for our sport and the freedom. And basically, you're standing up for our children when you do that. So, wow, you brought up some really big, big points. And I would just say to the listeners out there, if this stuff bugs you, find a way to regain it. Thomas Jefferson said resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. And if you believe that USTA is being tyrannical in what they are doing, and more how they were doing it, then stand up. You know, unless you're looking for some brownie points. And believe me, they it's not like they're going to swing in and to your help and give you a bunch of help. They're always going to just look out for their own skin first. You know, what makes them look good. And it's not a good thing. It's not the power they have. It's the abuse of their power always. So...
Do they have some people that are look, you've worked with them very closely. Are they set up where they could work? Are they set up where
we have good
work?
People? No. I need to make this point. Bad organizations can have good people, and good organizations can have bad people. This is a bad framework that they have. They have some very good people. Some people I'd go to war with every day or battle with on my side every day, people who I respect tremendously. But it is a bad structure. The organization is a bad structure because it is a top-down, over-regulating structure. You know, and again, I gave you earlier in the program what the structure should be. It should be an empowerment of those underneath. It's interesting. Today I had a meeting with my team, and I was saying, telling them how I would like to get to the place where they were all self-motivated enough to where we didn't have to spoon feed. I said, it's interesting. There's our guy Joe here. He makes straight A's in civil engineering. And I said, how many times do you have to get tutors, or do you have to have people tell you what to do? Never. He makes straight A's. And I said, it's the same thing in coaching or anything. When you, first of all, if you're an achiever, you know, you like the freedom to do it in your way, and you know that you have a winning ball club and you can do it in your way. It's not that you don't have resources for help. He has resources for help, but his motivation comes from him. He's not looking for the trick or something that will get him over the hump. Just like good players, they are not, they're out doing it on their own. They're out self-motivating. So, you know, we're always looking for some kind of trick or something, but really it's freedom. Freedom is what empowers people. And all of these things, I don't care if it's the green ball or a scoring system or something, if the scoring system was so good, they would not have had to beat us over the head for the last 4 years to more longer than that. If they would not have to beat everybody over the head to just force us into it. And it's taken a poisonous medicine, and we're going to spit it out eventually because it's just so repugnant, the way that they have done this. It's very slick. If you look back and if you count the dots, if you are connect the dots, it's a very slick move that they have done. Very, very slick. But in the end, a slick move is a slick move, and it's not going to inspire anyone.
No, it's not. I think you're right. You know, and I don't know if it's a slick move as much as it is. It's a natural evolution based on sort of this whole idea. You know, much of the change and much of what's going on is based on this idea that it's just inconvenient anymore to play a tennis match. And they look at it as, you know, most people, you know, they want to create a convenient tennis match. And they want to award it the same thing. Everything, you know, I don't know.
Players don't look at it that way. You're talking about tournament directors. The tournament directors, something that's a little long is an inconvenience. They don't get to their cocktail parties early enough, and they don't. They might have to work late into the night or something like that. But our kids get – it's like a teacher that doesn't want to grade papers at night. If you take all standardized tests, you don't have to grade papers at night, but your kids don't learn more. If you play all these hybrid scoring systems, you get out of the tournament earlier, but the kids don't learn.
Yeah, very good people. Like you said, you have very good. There's very good people that work for the USTA. I mean, I can think of a couple of examples real quick. One this last tournament my son went to, And, you know, they've got an official there. Now, what happens is at the national level, they got this philosophy about how they want to shorten things up and do this and do that. And it gets down to this umpire somewhere, you know, in, you know, located there in South Carolina. And this umpire is worried because the children, you know, they're not supposed to play but only so many matches in a day. Well, Coach, you know, they're not actually playing a full match. They're playing no ad scoring. You're starting at 2-2 and a 7-point tiebreaker for the third set. That's not even a set in regular tennis, you know, in a regular match. So, you know, there is an idea from on top, but by the time it gets filtered down to the bottom, they're paralyzed. They can't even play that. They can't even play two or three of those matches in a day now, or they don't call that overworking the child. And so you've got that. You've got several entities that have become, you know, important at the USTA. You've got that side over there that's bound and determined to market tennis. You've got the legal side that's bound and determined to protect all the millions and millions of dollars that they've got in bank accounts. And then you've got, what did I say? I said the legal side, and you got the performance side, or you've got the side where, you know, the sports science people who are bound and determined to tell you that, you know, in order to have quality tennis,
they're looking to be validated. They're looking for validity.
In the end, the type of person that's going to win a tennis match is going to look very different, you know, and it's not going to be because tennis has changed all that much. It's going to be a lot different because, I mean, the game itself, or how it's going to be because of the length of the match. The length of the match, now you could probably have a guy that looks like a linebacker go out there and just crush balls and maybe win if it's only going to be a 30-minute competition. I propose that you guys put asterisks beside all the records that are set from this day forward when it comes to college.
Wow, because, that's a good point. You know, like wind aided in track and field. You need an asterisk, wind aided, just scoring system aided. That should be.
Marketing aided, you know, match competition where, you know, it's a 30. It's not even 30 minutes. I think last year the doubles, Georgia and Georgia Tech, both of them made the NCAAs. Obviously, Georgia's a little bit better. Georgia Tech.
Oh, it's laughable.
It was 19 minutes. The doubles was over. 19 minutes. The doubles was over. And so in that circumstance, to me, that deserves an asterisk. You need to put an asterisk beside those years we go through. You know, you call it O ecosystem, but I just think it's, you know, I think you could use it. Gosh, you guys could use it. You could do some tournaments. You know, you've talked about, I don't know whether you do it in the fall or spring. You were in the spring. People do it in the fall now. But you could have a tournament where you guys all get together, maybe the guys and the girls, and you have a cookout and you have a round robin. You can just shorten format there. That works good. But to decide a match on what you guys are deciding on now is not making it more relevant. It's going to make it more irrelevant.
Correct.
We got a few minutes left, so let's close it up here. This is my second show back after my weight loss break, so I appreciate you coming on and helping me out. You're always... That's one of the things. I got capacity. Let me tell you real quick before I go. This is my parting comment, and then I'll let you have the last word. You are amazing. I tell you what, you're amazing, Coach. Coach Wayne Bryan is amazing. Coach Dick Goolsley. A lot of you guys that are amazing, you guys have the capacity to offer and deliver and to present more than anybody around you. And you do fantastic work day in and day out. Kudos to you. Kudos to Wayne Bryan. Kudos to Dick Gould. Guys like y'all. It's guys like y'all that really motivate the next generation that is coming on. So go ahead, Coach. What do you got to say?
Well, thank you. That's a great compliment. And I wanted to ask anybody out there, if you don't like what's going on, stand up and speak out. And if USTA had any guts, they would want to know what you really believe, and they'd put you in a position to where you could at least do a devil's advocate or keep them in balance. it's shameful that they just get yes men around them. And the point is that the reason that myself, Wayne Bryan, Jack Sharp, oh golly, and Robert Lansdor, people, we speak out is because this is much more than just an after-school activity to us. It's a very relevant way of impassioning our children or helping our children gain the passion and the skill set for their lives. And it's an educational endeavor. It's much more than just a sport. We've turned it into the sissy sport now that people used to say it was in the 50s and the 60s, you know. And it's a shame because it's not. It's a great, great sport. It should never be dumbed down. It should be respected. It should be honored. And we need to fight for it. You folks out there, stand up, speak out. And you know, daggone it, it's just is very awful that many are just intimidated. They think the USTA is this all-knowing, the Oz behind the curtain. But you know what? They're just people, good people, trying to figure it out. The bureaucracy is wrong. It needs to be changed. So,
Coach, thanks
all right.
for coming
Thank
on. You got the last word there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, come play the Marietta Grand Prix. It's a lot of fun. You get to play a lot of tennis, and we have Chick-fil-A sandwiches from Chick-fil-A. And you get to eat a lot. And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey, folks, this is J.P. Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility, windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards, you can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
This has been the We Coach Tennis radio show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.
No!